All this week, the 15th World Congress on Public Health is on in Melbourne. So over this week, I'm going to be speaking with some of the world's leading public health experts who are at the Congress. We'll talk about things like the economic determinants of health, the impact of the environment on global health, from the food you eat to the air you breathe. But to start, where the decisions are made, with politics. And with the rise of populist politics in the USA and in Europe and in Australia, what are the implications for public health? And what role has health played in the rise of populist politics? Martin McKee is Professor of European Public Health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Hello, Martin. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Wanda.
Now, basic question, just in essence, what is public health? What does the term actually mean?
Well, public health is about promoting health, preventing disease, but at the level of entire population. So it complements individual medicine, where you've got a health worker with a patient. What it does is to look at the things that have to be done collectively, like dealing with pollution, for example, getting clean water, all the things that will improve the health for everyone.
Well, now you argue that today, in many countries, public health professionals have become enemies of the people. Can you explain what you mean?
Yes, indeed. I think what we're seeing is really the rise of populist politics. And as we try to understand that, we're seeing, as the Economist magazine showed, that one of the major drivers in people shifting to vote for Trump was the level of health, poor health in communities. People who were left behind, people who were feeling desperate, were looking for some salvation. And then what we now find is that it's exactly those groups who are going to suffer most under some of the policies that are being put forward, the people who will lose their insurance coverage if the Affordable Care Act is repealed. We're concerned about that. Now, why did I choose the title enemies of the people? Of course, that's a term that Donald Trump has used to refer to what he describes as the failing media. It was a term used by a tabloid newspaper in the United Kingdom to refer to judges who were saying Parliament needed to take a lead in the European Union discussions. But I've really taken it from the 19th century Norwegian playwright Henrik Ibsen. He wrote a play called Enemy of the People. And that was about a doctor in a small Norwegian town that depended for its income on people coming to take the waters. And he found that the water was polluted. It was making people ill. And he had to decide, do I stand against the interests of the water company of the spa, or do I give in to them and say, this is what we need for the economy of the town? And he stood up to them and he became
and
an enemy
for
people.
For it. Yeah.
He had all the windows in his house broken. He was driven out of town. But he said, the strongest man is he who stands alone.
Well, I mean, do you think then taking that Ibsen play really and its theme, do you think people working in public health have an obligation, a duty to advocate on behalf of people who are negatively affected by public health, by public policy failures, whatever the implications may be for them?
Absolutely. And we've had many really good examples here in Australia of people who are standing up to those in power who are trying to undermine health, trying to damage health. The tobacco industry, where Australia has been a world leader, the alcohol industry, some of the companies that are peddling junk food, particularly to the Pacific Islands, some of your neighbours. These are incredibly powerful corporations. They've got strong links to politicians, and somebody has to stand up to them because they are killing the next generation.
Well, also with us is Ilona Kickbush, who's Associate Professor at the Graduate Institute Geneva in Switzerland. Ilona, thank you for joining us too.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this understanding of public health and the view of the responsibility of health professionals, as Martin's talking about, have their origins in the 19th century, and not just with Norwegian playwrights. Tell us about a German physician, Rudolf Virchow. What's his significance?
Rudolf Virchow is actually one of the most important public health heroes historically, because he spoke out explaining how the living conditions of people actually impacted on their health. There was a big cholera epidemic, and he said, this is not a medical problem. This is a political issue. This is a problem about how people are forced to live, how they work, the water they have access to. So he laid all this out, and he was not only a doctor, he was a parliamentarian.
Which was handy then.
Yes, and would be handy today. We would need more public health people in Parliament. And his great opponent was Bismarck. And they had a significant number of very tough fights in the Berlin Parliament, later in the German Parliament. There were political reorganizations. But he was a very forceful voice to say it is the social determinants that make the difference and it needs political action to respond.
So, Ilona, what does that mean in the 21st century? Health is a political choice, you say. Explain what that means today.
I believe it's very important to underline that because so frequently in politics, people say health is an individual choice. They put the responsibility of health, of ill health, on individuals, saying, well, if you just chose better. Here we lay out the information for you. Here is this enormous scope of products, and we've given you the information, and just do what's necessary. And we are trying to say the political choice lies in making the healthy choice, first of all, the easier choice for people, to make sure that any kind of products, be they soft drinks or salty foods or whatever, are truly healthy so that people are ensured if they go and buy such products that they will not be harmed. But you can take the whole scope of issues that are necessary, like ensuring healthy air, ensuring that people have access to parks. We call that health in all policies, and we try to say that so many determinants of health impact and need to be political choices. And this delegation of responsibility to people that we sometimes call blaming the victim is quite inappropriate.
You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Amanda Smith with two of the keynote speakers at the World Congress on Public Health that opens today in Melbourne. Dr. Ilona Kickbush is from the Graduate Institute Geneva, and Professor Martin McKee is from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. So, Martin, when you look at Europe, the UK, the US, or even Australia, as you've mentioned, populist politics are on the rise. Tell me more about what impact this is having, is going to have, do you think, on public health?
Well, governments play a really important role in promoting the health of the public. I think we're seeing in the United States, with the threat of the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, that the real successes that it achieved, expanding coverage, reducing the number of uninsured to a record low level, could well be reversed if Donald Trump ever actually manages to take forward what he plans to do. And there's a question over that. In the United Kingdom, we're seeing the with the Brexit debate leaving the European Union, a massive rise in race hate attacks, intense sort of xenophobia, looking at the others, the minorities. And in addition to that, of course, there's the damage to the economy that is being done. We've already seen the value of the pound plummet. And that means that will be less money for the National Health Service, less money for the environment and so on. We're seeing the threat to tear up all of our health and safety legislation by some of the supporters of leaving the EU. Much of our rules for the environment, for health and safety, for working conditions are derived from European legislation, and there are some people who would like to use the opportunity of leaving the EU to get rid of all of that. One of our MPs said that if standards are good enough for India, they should be good enough for us. He'd obviously forgotten about the Bhopal chemical disaster, but that's what we're seeing a threat, the threat from now.
But Britain had its national health scheme before it was part of the European Union. It had that whole system of public health in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And the NHS has been a tremendous success. But of course, it isn't particularly generously funded. We have seen major problems. And the danger is that if the economy collapses, as many of us feel that it may well do, we're already seeing the signs of that. Now, we haven't left the European Union yet, but inflation is creeping up. We have serious worries about where what we will be be doing in terms of international trade. So there's going to be a real threat to the economy as we look ahead. Now, the supporters of leaving the EU say that that is a price worth paying. They see the ability to, as they think, control immigration, that being an opportunity. Of course, the problem is we need migrants. We desperately need migrants for construction work, for the health service, for everything else. So they probably won't achieve that. But there's a real danger of the country simply running out of money because of the damage that will be done. And that will have an impact on the health service. That will have an impact on the environment. It will have an impact on education. A real problem.
Martin, explain to me more from your point of view with the US situation. Why, when you say that there's evidence that a large percentage of those people who voted for Donald Trump, health was their declining health status was a factor in that, and yet those same people would be against Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act. I don't understand the paradox there.
No, not many people do. And I think what's really interesting, a very widely read book in the US, What's the Matter with Kansas, by an author called Thomas Franks, was talking about how do you get poor white people to vote consistently against their own interests. What we've seen is this massive opioid epidemic in the United States. We've seen all sorts of problems, particularly in the center part of the country. It was The Economist, in fact, that discovered the link with health. I'm not suggesting that people were thinking particularly about their health when they voted, but they were looking at what factors there were from all of the statistical data that most closely explained the shift in voting, and they found that health stood out more than anything else. Essentially, this is a sign of people being left behind by deindustrialization, by job losses, by all sorts of other things. And then they turn to essentially anybody that can give them hope. Now, several hundred years ago, they might have turned to religion and might have looked for miracles. Now they're looking for other people who can give them that vision of a better world, making America great again. But the problem is, of course, that Donald Trump will not make America great again.
Ilona Kickbush, tease out for me this ambiguity that sort of seems to characterise our attitude to state health initiatives. So, you know, on the one hand, you often hear the libertarian arguments against the intrusion of the nanny state, whether it's to do with tobacco taxes or labels on unhealthy food or whatever. And yet there is an expectation that the state provides health services, certainly in European countries and in Australia.
Well, there are two sides to this, I think. One is the expectation towards health services. And again, that will be different in different countries. For me, it's sometimes difficult to totally relate to the kind of things that Martin describes. I live in Switzerland and work a lot in Germany. And these kind of extremes that are now experienced both in the US and the UK are not part of the political debate in Germany or in Switzerland for that matter. The issue is really how much do people see is their everyday life and their choice affected and through public health measures. And there are very strong political voices which are supported, of course, by a whole range of companies and private interests that continuously make the arguments, here are people that are taking your choice away from you. And people who in general have little choice in life because they work hard, because they have to make ends meet, they are given the impression that the few pleasures that are left to them and the few areas of life where they can make choices, or where at least they feel they can make choices, are now also taken away from them. And so that tension between, yes, we do want a state that provides us with the basics that we need, but on the other hand, we do not want an intrusion into our everyday life, into freedom, becomes a very complex one. And we are partly experiencing this now with an anti-vaccination movement that says, I want to choose what happens with my child. We are experiencing that in a whole range of areas where people will not accept the scientific evidence and say, I want to trust my own feelings. I want to trust someone else, not the neighborhood doctor. doctor, or definitely not the state.
Well, Martin, what is the impact on public health of, as Ilona's referring to there, a sort of post-truth world, you know, where evidence-based science and medicine is now unconvincing?
Yeah, that's right. It is a real issue. And the example of vaccination is exemplifies this perfectly, because in the United States and Australia, you do have people who are campaigning to avoid or refusing to have their children immunized. Now, that poses a danger for everybody, because if we're going to control disease, you need to get very high levels of immunization to prevent the spread of disease. But unfortunately, this is all based in complete nonsense. And we've seen in particular on social media and some of the alternative websites, some of the most outrageous lies being peddled. Other examples here, wind farms, for example. Clearly, climate change is a key issue facing all of our countries. You're seeing it at the minute with the Cyclone Debbie. And we know that although you can't link any individual storm to climate change, the fact that we're having so many more is important. And yet in the United States, there is a new Secretary for the Environment who doesn't actually believe in climate change and is threatening to walk away from the Paris Accord. You have politicians here who are trying to get more coal out of the ground to burn more coal to make the situation worse. And we need to try and counter that with evidence.
Well, Ilona, public health workers and researchers, it seems to me, have been, you know, good at measuring and showing inequalities in public health systems around the world, but perhaps less successful at finding solutions. You know, what's the way forward? What needs to change?
I would not agree with you. I think there are solutions, and we can see solutions in many, many countries. We come back to health is a political choice. Are the political powers that be, are they willing to take choices that are sometimes unpopular, in relation to vaccination, for example, that are against certain private interests, take a sugar tax, for example? We have solutions for a whole series of public health issues. It needs the political support to be really to take them through. And that is why, at least as I will argue at the conference, the public health profession also has to have the courage to move into that difficult field of politics, just as Virchow did, and make the point that it is the political choice that matters, and that we have a true responsibility, not only nationally, but also globally.
Well, wishing you both courage. It's been great to meet each of you. Now, I know you're both speaking shortly at the World Congress on Public Health, so I'm going to let you scoot. Martin McKee is Professor of European Public Health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in the UK, and Ilona Kickbush is Associate Professor at the Graduate Institute Geneva in Switzerland. Martin, Ilona, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the 15th World Congress on Public Health is running in Melbourne all this week. And in Life Matters, over the course of the week, we'll focus on other big issues that are being discussed and debated there.